Welcome to episode 6 of the Patterson Podcast. This is your host, David Mitchell. We're here together to share tips and tools from the Patterson process and to hear the stories of people like you using the process to do incredible things. Today, we've got a really fun conversation around the heart and the mind of the entrepreneur and what it really looks like to build a breakthrough billion-dollar business. We're going to hear from Kurt Richardson, founder and chief visionary officer of Otter Products, home to the brands of OtterBox and LifeProof. Otter Products is a billion-dollar global company and is the industry leader for protective cases for technologies like smartphones, iPads, and much more. In this episode, we're going to learn more about that story. Kurt, I want to begin at your beginning. And so today, in our world today, it's really appealing and attractive to be an entrepreneur. Everyone kind of wants to put that on their LinkedIn profile as that's who they are. But that wasn't always the case. Tell us a little bit about your journey. When did you first really discover you're an entrepreneur? And what's that journey been like?
Yeah, I guess maybe this conversation kind of dates me because I don't even... Early on, I don't even remember the word being used. So I'm not sure it really showed up till about 15 years ago, or certainly became the thing to be up until maybe 15, 20 years ago. But early on, for me, the journey started as a young child, really. I mean, clear back to, selling creepy crawlers on the bus to having a shooting gallery in the garage to garage sales in the yard to sandbags, filling sandbags, shoveling walks. So for me, I really do believe it's part of a person's DNA. I'm not sure I believe you go to school to become an entrepreneur, or I think you either are or you aren't. It's part of who you are. And there's, I don't believe there's tons of entrepreneurs either. Cause if there was, we'd have a lot of chaos. You know, we're not the most, we're disruptive. So we're not just disruptive in the marketplace, but we're disruptive in our own business. So it's for the key for the entrepreneur to be successful in many ways is for them to understand who they are and who they aren't. And, there's a lot in that conversation, lot in that answer there.
Yeah, I've heard you speak before. You mentioned kind of the sandbags and how as a kid you'd place yourself at the bottom of a hill when it had snowed and start selling sandbags to help the trucks get up the hill.
Well, it was even more door to door. And I think my dad ended up doing more of that business than me because I weighed a whopping, 65 pounds. I could fill up the bag, but lifting the bag was not going to happen. So
you said that. As an entrepreneur, a lot of what you do is about disruption. And so what is it like for you in your own journey as an entrepreneur to be that it's almost like you can't help but disrupt things? Do you see it as a gift, or sometimes do you wish that you just could be okay with status quo?
No, status quo would drive me nuts. I mean, and I think status quo for most entrepreneurs would – they just can't sit there. They can't be there. And that's, when I look back even now, my journey at Otter, that's why, years ago I was ready to step out of the CEO role because early on, certainly in the startup, you play many roles. But as your company grows and gets big and we're approaching $1 billion, it's your role as CEO becomes one role. And I don't do one role well. So, and most entrepreneurs wouldn't either. They would much rather be all over the place doing multiple things and which would basically drive a large organization crazy. And you see that in the marketplace where that happens. I think Steve Jobs probably did that plenty at Apple, and there's good and there's bad, but I think it's understanding where that starts and stops is critical. Within a large organization, and then small organization, certainly the entrepreneur is going to play a much larger role.
Mm. Kurt, the last 10 years have been pretty monumental in the technology industry. There's been so much change, so much growth, so much disruption. From your perspective, both as an individual and as a company at Otter Products, what have the last 10 years really been like for you guys? And as you look back, how would you describe that season?
Well, I would call it right away, I'd call it a rocket ride for us, you know, to go from 6 million to a billion in revenue without the right systems and processes put into place. I don't believe Otter would have survived that. We would have failed. And we certainly have failed in some areas. We've over-rotated it with some business and processes that have become more bureaucratic that slow you down. Certainly any kind of large organization is going to start to struggle with speed. I think that probably bothers me more than anything, is that we're not as fast as we should be. And I think even Tom, you know, just rediscovering the whole business unit, BDU, type of process, we're starting to break it into smaller pieces where they can be fast and nimble. And they don't
Tom Patterson's teaching on business units.
Right.
And yeah.
Where we just don't get sucked into, bureaucracy, you know, and certainly those systems were put into place for a reason because things were out of control, but pretty soon they stack up and they just get in the way.
Yeah. I've heard, the quote before that, most companies die of suicide, not homicide. It's kind of a sort of crass way of saying it. Most companies end up dying because of self-inflicted wounds.
So the Patterson process makes you focus on the right things, and it's discovering what those right things are. But when you don't follow that process, at least for Otter, the Patterson process is what got us to a billion. We phased away from it. All became but extinct. It was given lip service, and that was pretty much it. And it's a perfect case study for taking what was working and going to something that didn't work. And now in the last 10 months, we've reinfused the process into every part of the business. It's how we do it at Otter. And it's part of our DNA. It's what got us to where we are. It's what'll get us to where we're going next. Mm.
You first engaged with the Stratop process, I think, back in 2006. Tell us a little bit, what were you feeling back then that caused you to reach out and look for something like Stratop?
Sure.
What was going on in you and the company?
Well, I was very involved with eMyth at the time. And eMyth really helped me as an entrepreneur understand all the facets and pieces of business and how they interact with each other. I like to call eMyth like the blocking and tackling of Otter. And we don't per se use every part of eMyth, but we do it naturally now because it's the blocking and tackling and doing business. And we've started to do that really well. But what we were missing was a strategic way of moving forward, infusing a vision and core values and putting all those things together so they functioned and everybody within the organization understood where we were going and how we were going to get there. And then they were always working on the right things, right? You're dialing that down in every part of your business. And there's nothing else like this process out there. At least I've never run into it. There may be, but everybody that we've ever exposed to it has said, unbelievable. Nothing else like it. And that's what I was looking for. I was looking for a piece that was missing back in 2006. I was looking for that piece that helped connect the dots. I had begun to understand the blocking and tackling. I'd basically gotten an MBA in my business by working with eMyth for 5 years with a coach. Expensive, but absolutely worth every penny of it. But there was pieces within eMyth that were missing, and that was the strategic side. I felt that it didn't really – it addressed it, but it didn't address it like it needed to be addressed. Vision wasn't super addressed. You know, there was parts of it, though, that were very key to getting me to the point going, I need something more. And that something more ended up being the Patterson process. Mm.
So you guys have experienced pretty incredible, monumental growth, and you've spoken already today about maybe some of the things that you over-rotated, or some of the things you maybe did wrong. But clearly, a lot of things went right. What's one of the things that you did either culturally or with your innovation or execution that you look back and say, we did that really well?
I think core values were key to the fundamental underlying culture within the organization. Culture trumps strategy all day long. If you don't have the right culture within your organization, if people don't believe in leadership, if they don't believe in the vision, if they don't believe in where you're going and how you're going to get there, you're never going anywhere. So the Patterson process helped knit that together, but we really did nail down our core values early on. And as leadership, we said, these are you cannot go against these core values or you won't be here. It's just part of, have we always done that perfectly right? No, we haven't. And we've had to ask for forgiveness because we've blown it before. But for the most part, I think if you ask auditors across the globe, they would say, yeah, they do what they say and they say what they do.
So hitting on culture then is, as you say, culture eats strategy on any given day, we say, and it's been such a focus of yours. In addition to simply naming the values and calling them out, how have you, as the founder, CEO, and now chief visionary officer, how have you cultivated and protected culture within Otter?
It really boiled down to the core value is how do we treat each other? You know, the golden rule. You know, if I had to get rid of all our core values but one, that's the one I would keep. Is treat others as you'd want to be treated. And that wasn't happening within the organization for those 5 years. And you saw what it did to the culture was, 9 months ago, almost everybody at Otter was ready to quit. You know, so the culture, it had gone downhill so badly. And I don't think anybody intended for that to happen. The culture just gone really down the tubes. Otter was imploding.
You've spoken before about when people will come to you and talk about the overnight success of Otter, that you kind of laugh and say, yeah, it's been a 30-year overnight success. And so the business really began in your garage, right?
Well, it began when I bought out an old toolmaker in 1981. Now, I went back in the garage, you know, three times. And I always say, well, I didn't go bankrupt. I just went back to the garage and started over. And that's pretty true. I mean, I was bankrupt. You know, I started a company, grown it, hit a ceiling and fell back. And a lot of that's where when Emith came into play, you know, after the third time in the garage, that's what really helped me start to understand how business needs to run and how it needs to function. And it isn't a daily firefighting event. I think many of us entrepreneurs get our value from firefighting, right? You know, but the reality is most of us are more arsonists than we are firefighters. So I always say that I'm a better arsonist than a firefighter. And most people would agree, especially my wife, I'm sure. You know, so it comes back to the entrepreneur also understanding who he is and who he isn't. And not becoming his own worst enemy.
Well, and it sounds like as well that sometimes what a company needs is an arsonist to go in and light some fires and burn some things up and allow for new growth.
Well, I think 9 months ago when we came back into Otter, I mean, I clicked in right away. So I was in war mode, you know, I'm ready to change things and flip them. But I also understood at the same time I had to bring the right people along with me because we weren't going to stay in that mode. It was a whole new executive team in, really focused on our first 100 days, focusing on doing what we said we were going to do, working on the culture, getting people to believe again. And that took... I took all of 100 days, and I think people were just starting to believe. I think they're pretty bought in now. We still have work to do. We still have a ways to go. We still need to break down bureaucracy and speed things up. And that'll be that's a different era now for Otter, is how do we get back to our fast, quick, innovative roots? How do we do that? How do we go beyond the case, right?
Yeah.
As we look at the we're known for our phone cases. I mean, that's what we do primarily. That's our core business. I would say in 5 years, that will still be a chunk of our core business, that will not be all of our core business.
We're going to come to that in just a moment. But when you talk about innovation, and we were mentioning about the garage, in the headquarters at Otterbox, you have these conference rooms with these garage doors that sort of harken back and provide a voice to the beginnings of the company. And I think for me, there's something visual and meaningful about what I would call the spirit of the garage, where there's risk-taking, where there's innovation, where there's, in a sense, a nothing-to-lose kind of culture.
Right.
You can build those rooms with the garage doors, but how hard is it to infuse, in a sense, the spirit of that garage, that spirit of innovation?
Yeah, I it's very hard when you're big, when you're a large corporation. Well, I'd say we struggle with that. We struggle with it because, you know, you bring a lot of people in from different places, and they bring what I would call their junk in the trunk. You know, it's kind of like getting on an airplane. I always say, you get on an airplane, when do you usually get sick on an airplane? Because the guy in 20 rows back has the flu, you know,
right.
So everybody on the plane catches it. Yeah. And that's kind of what happens when you start hiring people from other places. There are some companies that people say, well, I'm not going to mention them, but they say, well, I work here. It's like, I mean, that's like the kiss of death.
Mm.
Just because of the corporate culture, we know more than likely that's going to show up with the person, and we do not, that hasn't worked well in the past.
Yeah.
So we're very careful where we hire people from, but the innovation side, I mean, it's tough to get. And I think that's where we've begun to isolate into those BDUs and give them that freedom to break the rules, kind of make mistakes, go fast, make a mistake, figure it out, fix it, you know, fire, like Collins would say, fire those small bullets before you go and fire a missile. And, you know, we've got some of that going on now. We've fired some bullets. We're loading the cannon, and, will come out guns ablazing.
I think probably one of the reasons maybe that's so needed in this season is you guys have been heavily focused on cases for smartphones.
Right.
And as we look out, I think, and you can correct me, but I think there's something like 2.5 billion smartphones in the world, many more to come. But a lot of those are going to be coming in sub-Saharan Africa and areas where they can't afford the $700 phone with the $80 case. So the industry is changing, in other words.
Well, the industry is not growing like it was, right? It doesn't mean that the industry is shrinking. I think people are not, they're not turning around and buying a new smartphone every 6 months. Every time a new one comes out, they're not out there, you know, going, I need the new latest, greatest thing. They're waiting 2, 3. I mean, I still have my 6 and the 7s out, you know, so... It's the frequency of buying a new phone is not what it used to be. The phone isn't changing that much. Certainly the industry, we attach to devices sold. So if there's not more devices being sold, we're not going to sell as many cases. On the same hand, there's still a lot of people that haven't heard of Otterbox and LifeProof. You know, so there's no reason we can't continue to grow. There's no reason we can't play in other spaces in the consumer electronics world or in our existing channels. There, and we have not done that, but we are doing that. We are working on that and coming out with more products. We call it share a wallet. You know, if someone's going to buy a case, well, wouldn't they buy a battery, a headphone? You know, well, why wouldn't they buy an OtterBox branded one? And so there's no reason why we can't still grow within this market. We're not going to grow like we grew before. And that's okay. I mean, we could still grow easily at 10, 15% a year, which is unheard of growth, you know, just through new products, new variations of our products. And we're working on that now, whereas we've grown pretty stagnant over the last few years. I would say the innovation was there, but it really wasn't there. We weren't launching well.
Are there any particular opportunities that you regret missing?
I think where we've failed is we've been our, where people say, well, who's your biggest competition? I always say we're our biggest competition. And we really have been. We've limited ourselves in our investing in the tooling and to be there at launch. So it's really, you know, most of your sales happen at the beginning of the life cycle of a product. So if you're not on the shelf, you know, we doubled this last launch. We were out there with over 2 million units at launch. Still wasn't enough. The reality is we're probably a million short, you know. So it's figuring that out, working with partners and relationships to make sure that we really serve the customers out there.
Changing pace a little bit, over the last 10 years, you've also had about 600 or 700 of your team go through the Patterson Life Plan process. Mm-hmm. That's a significant investment to make. Why did you make that investment in your team?
Well, we really believe at Otter culturally that people are our biggest asset. And we really want people to understand who they are. And and what they want. I mean, I give this to Emeth. Emeth really made me discover, okay, what do you really want? Really ask myself that question. And most people never ask themselves that question. They don't even understand that question. And it isn't about stuff. It isn't about position. It's about what I want in my heart, not my head. So we really want Otters to really fundamentally understand what they want in their heart, not their head, and really dig in. So 2 days of intensive time understanding their past, understanding how they got there, and understanding where they want to go is critical to having a healthy employee base, right? Mm-hmm. So for us, that's just a huge investment in our people. And we realize that we've lost some people because of that. They've discovered, this isn't what I want to do. And that's okay. I would rather pay them to understand who they really are and what they, because that's just an investment in our community and people, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we get some great stories from that too.
That's awesome.
So it's you know, it's changed and affected many other people's lives because of this process. People go and do great things that they really want to do.
And even as you speak about getting clear on what you want and your heart, and also getting clear on your talents and where your greatest leverage is, and you've been through the process too. So even as you think of your own leadership, there's a lot of different demands on your time, a lot of different people pulling you in different directions, no doubt, or seeking to pull you in different directions. So how do you really understand and get clear on where your greatest leverage is within Otter products and where you can really invest the best of your time and talents?
Yeah. I think it comes down to, I'll get selfish here. It's like, what do I want? Where do I want to spend my time? You know, I think I'm 58 years old and you start to ask yourself, well, how many breaths do I have left? You know, you see, you have friends dying, you know, you have people that have died and you go, okay, well, with my time left, what do I really want to do? And at the same time, you have a huge responsibility, a company, and you know, that is a key part in your community, and you have employees that, you know, their livelihood and their future depends on, you know, some of your actions or lack thereof. So for me, it's really bringing the right people in to run Otter and then being able to come alongside them and do the best thing for them. Understanding that maybe the way I see myself is not the way everybody else sees me. You know, they see me maybe as the Papa Otter kind of, and I understand that, and it's important that that role be played and played well, and that people and to really speak the vision into the business and help others speak that vision in. It isn't all about me just speaking that in. It's about, you know, Jim and Steve and others, you know, Tyler within the organization being able to speak that as well, and me to back that up and help them and come alongside them where they need my influence. And so I think that's a critical part for me at this point is listening to leadership within the organization and plugging in where I need to plug in and getting out of the way where I need to get out of the way. Because I can get in the way too. You know, people can look to me and I don't want them looking to me. I want them looking to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's the whole founder syndrome that's out there. Did I struggle? I didn't struggle with that too much. I was able to go, okay, well, I want to go off and do this. And I probably went off too much and did that. And that's why there was issues and why I had to come back. And while I realize that I always need to play a certain role within the organization and not abandon that role, but embrace that role.
The mission of Otter and indeed your whole family of businesses is grow to give.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the genesis of that idea and what it means to you.
Well, so much of it comes from our background, having grown up, you know, a preacher's kid in rural Colorado with not much, not realizing that we didn't have much. I always felt like we had plenty, but also understanding that a lot of people supported my mom and dad. And so they were given through grace and charity and people believing in their vision and what they were doing. And then, so that translates into you, that imprints on you, right? You know, so, I think for Nancy and myself, both of us feel, very much to whom much is given, much is expected. And that's a saying we've always had around Otter. People go, where'd that come from? Well, that comes from a Jesus, you know. So for us, it's important that we give back. Our boys very much understand that. They're very giving and generous. And, you know, so for our family, we're going, how do we imprint that on future generations? How do we help them understand that they've been given much and they need to give back? And so to also infuse that into the culture at Otter in Blue Ocean is part of who we are and part of what we desire to have happen in the community and globally. How do we give back? You know, we do it for the right reasons. It's not to get something. It's understanding it's not ours anyway.
Yeah. And you guys have programs where the employees are given time to invest back into the community,
right?
And
paid time off, yep. As well as different things that happen throughout the year to raise money for nonprofits, to invest in Otter Cares or other local nonprofits or global nonprofits. Mm. But really, we've started to really focus on Otter Cares and Otter Cares mission.
That's good. So we're going to switch pace into our quick fire round where I ask you a short question or statement and you give me your immediate response. Okay. Sound good?
Sounds good.
What's a favorite book of yours and why?
Well, E-Myth right away comes to me because it's such a story of, in many ways, I can read my life right into E-Myth. And so it hits home right away. So when people say, what's a good book to read? Say E-Myth.
That's good. I'm not sure if you're a man of daily habits or not, but if you are, what's a daily practice that you do that you would encourage others to follow?
Well, I daily fail at that.
I would say I would love to be a man of where I get up in the morning and have my quiet time and everything else, but I don't. I don't. I try and then I fail, and so I quit trying. So I'm not a creature of habit quite like that.
You've spoken before about failing forward, though. So hopefully we're moving forward.
Hopefully I'm failing forward. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Who's been a great mentor to you and why?
You know, right away I go, two people come to mind. One is Donna Uzelic, my E-Myth coach. And she was great for 5 years, just really challenged me on things and challenged me in my thinking and challenged me as an entrepreneur to be more focused. And then I would say my brother, certainly in just thinking and the way of thinking, and maybe that's combined with Tom as well, Tom Patterson. So, you know, no formal mentors. I wish I'd have had a formal mentor, you know. I never felt like I had somebody that was in the same boat as me. You know, I went to some of these CEO roundtable things and I just felt like this is like, need five couches in here because these people need mental help.
Right. That's good. How do you stay refreshed and replenished in your own life?
I learned to play. I think it's important to learn to play, to be able to, do things, you know, and identifying, that comes with identifying what you really want, you know, and to be able to take the time to be creative. I realized that through my life plan process that I'm a very creative person. So I sculpt. I'm a sculptor. I also, you know, we have a ranch, so I'm always doing something up there, whether it's, you know, cultivating new trees, cutting up beetle kill, you know, digging a dam, putting in a road, you know, so for me, that's a big palette, right? And, same at our place down in the islands, you know, it's this creative space. I may not do the work, but I'm painting the picture for others to do, which is much like a business as well, right? So, I get a lot of rejuvenation out of that creativity.
That's good. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us today and leading us through this conversation around building a breakthrough company. It's been great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
You've been listening to the Patterson Podcast. This episode was produced and edited by Mary Wade. Special thanks to Ox Creative for the music. And if you're listening and wanting to know more, you can reach out to us at PattersonCenter.com. That's Patterson with one T. It would be our pleasure to hear from you and to guide you deeper into this conversation. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and when you're there, please leave us a review. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Today, kind of everyone wants to be an entrepreneur, but it wasn't always the case.
You know, I think it's funny because I've been asked that question before, and I don't even know when the word showed up. But I certainly don't remember it as part of my vocabulary early on, or even people's vocabulary early on. I don't remember the word entrepreneur thrown around or the connotation that certainly that's what you wanted to be. I think it
just really, well, I haven't started. That wasn't my first question. That was me telling you what
was coming. I thought we were going.
I was like, dang it, that's a good answer.
Okay, well, I'll say it again.
Save it for later.
Yeah, so sorry, I was just prepping the thought.